Blog Talk Radio.
Let your hands for
Show Talk with Angela Butler. We have with us today Mr. Clayton Craddock. Clayton, what is your occupation?
My occupation is musician.
Musician? Sounds great. Sounds great. You're also an activist for equal parenting. Am I correct?
That is correct. I am in the process of writing a memoir and also consult with fathers who have gone through or are going through similar situations that I've experienced in family court. And I also have a blog and among other things that I'm working on to increase my level of activism to spread awareness of the adverse effects of widespread fatherlessness.
Okay. Is this why you decided to pursue this type of activism?
Well, one of the biggest reasons is because while I was going through my divorce, I realized I was put in a position that I really chose not to be in, and I realized that family court system is extremely biased towards mothers. And fortunately, I was proactive enough to get the correct information, so I wouldn't be led down the same path so many other men are led down. And once I realized what was going on, and after I got through it, I went through a couple of years of transition, and I realized that I can use my experience to help other people. And hopefully, if people want to gain from my experience and use it to their benefit, that's why I'm here.
Okay. In New York State, there is an opt-out of paying child support. Is this just the way you were able to refuse to pay child support?
It's an interesting question. What happened was, one day, while it was in the middle of my, well, it was actually the very beginning of my custody battle with my now ex-wife, I received a gift certificate to a men's spa called B. Braxton. I went there to get a haircut, manicure, pedicure, and a facial. I got my haircut, I got my facial, and I was getting my manicure, which is the only first and last one that I've ever received. I was speaking to the woman that was giving my manicure, and we were just talking. I was stressed out. I didn't know what to do. And she was telling me that she had gone through a divorce with her ex-husband. And since they had a little boy, she was like, you know what? It's a boy. Boys need their father. I was like, you know what? You're right. And I was like, I was really, you know, kind of happy to hear that someone says, you know what? Let's just split this thing and see if we can work together, but in separate homes since us adults can't get together. Well, she said, and we decided to opt out of, you know, paying of anyone paying child support. I was like, what? She's like, yes, you can opt out of paying child support. Nobody has to pay child support. I was like, for real? She's like, yeah, as long as you both agree, you can do whatever you want to do. I said, stop what you're doing right now. I mean, my nails were halfway done, and she had the filing thing out. I ran outside, and I called my lawyer. I was like, can you opt out of paying child support? He's like, sure you can. I was like, then why don't you tell me this before? Well, and that's the problem I have with a lot of lawyers. It's a whole other discussion. But I found out, yes, you can opt out. And that's what I wound up doing.
Okay. Why do you feel the court system is unfair toward fathers? Why do you feel this way?
I don't necessarily feel this way. It's just the reality. Anyone who has been to family court will see that it's supremely, I should say the word supremely, it's extremely biased towards mothers. It's been like that for a while. It's changing very, very slowly due to the fact that a lot of family court magistrates, judges, whatever you want to call them, understand that fathers are just as important as mothers. And a lot of fathers are finally starting to step up to the plate and demand equal time with their children. So things are changing very, very slowly, but for the vast majority of cases, men wind up being on the short end of the stick. It's usually because men don't know their options, like knowing that you don't have to pay child support. And I say that not to say that you go into any situation trying to get out of paying child support, which I'm sure we're going to get into a little bit later. I think that everyone, the mother and the father, should be required to support their children financially, as well as spiritually, physically and emotionally and spiritually.
Okay. What are your thoughts on the impact of children growing up without fathers?
I think it's devastating towards any community that sees fatherhood as something as disposable. It's been proven, just look at the black community over the past 50, 60 years, we now have a society where it's majority female-led, and it's pretty apparent that it hasn't turned out in our best interests. Now that it's happening to other communities, it's starting to rear its ugly head. And I think, and I say this over and over and over again, children fare best with a mother and a father. Fathers are not just there for financial support. Children need us just as much as they need their mothers.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The child support system is mainly about money. In your own words, tell my listeners what else the children, what you just did. Is that the reason you refuse to pay child support?
No, I refuse to pay child support because I didn't see a need to in my specific situation. Every situation is different when you're dealing with the separation of adults when they have children, a child or children. I think you need to look at your own specific situation and see what works out best. I think, in general, it works out best if everyone stays out of the family court system. The family court system is not there for your best interest. It's not there for the best interest of the child. They're looking out for their own best interest because they want to keep their own jobs. They want to perpetuate the system. They're not looking out for anyone but themselves. The reason why I chose not to pay child support is because since I've been a musician over the past 20 years or so, and I've been a full-time professional musician since 2000, I haven't had the opportunity to be with both of our children since their birth. I've been home during the day, and I took care of our daughter and our son during the day. My ex-wife worked during the day. There was a time period in our marriage where I had the opportunity to make certain decisions. She wanted to stay at home and take care of the kids. I said, there's nothing wrong with that. Our daughter's brand new. So I had a an off-Broadway show that I was doing at night. I also taught lessons, and I played weddings on the weekends. So I was pretty busy at night. You know, I'd leave at 6:30 and go play my show or teach a lesson before I played the show. And on the weekends, I'd, you know, play two or three weddings a weekend in addition to playing my show and teaching lessons. So I was pretty busy. I said, you know what, I have all this time during the day. You want to stay at home. You really can't stay in your job. Why don't you quit your job and I'll get a quote-unquote real job during the day. So I decided to go ahead and take a series of exams. I got my Series 6 and Series 63. These are you know, licenses that you get from the state of New York to sell financial services products. Since I had a knack for numbers, thanks to my father being an accountant, am I having the background to do it? I got a job at a financial services company, and you know, I thought I was going to be a stockbroker. I was like, oh, I'll make a lot of money. But little did I know, I'd be selling life insurance in addition to annuities and stocks and other financial products that would, you know, help the customer along their, you know, to achieve their financial goals. I was basically a salesman, really peddling life insurance, which is pretty lucrative if you're a good salesperson, which I found out a year into it that I wasn't. I'm not a very good salesperson, at least not selling that product.
Okay.
But let me finish, if you got a second.
Okay. Of course, I'm just going along with you, just making comments.
Okay. So I decided to work there, and I was doing okay because I was making a salary, very, very low salary, and, you know, after a while, they take the salary away, and then you're on your own. You got to make just nothing but commission. I was like, well, wait a minute. I'm not very good at this stuff. I'm not making any money. You know, they were saying, you got to do better. We're going to fire you. I heard that you can get a job at a bank because you have, you know, licenses that you can use to work at a bank. So in January 2006, I was like, you know what, let me quit this job I had at this company and decide to work at a bank. So I started working at a bank, which is a regular salary. I was a personal banker. So from January 2006 until August, I had a day job. I worked 9 to 6, opening up checking accounts. I thought I was going to be doing something different. What you do at a bank as a personal banker, you open up checking accounts. So I opened up checking accounts from 9 to 6, taught lessons from 6:30 to 7:30, played my show from 8 to 9:30. I did that Tuesday through Friday. On Friday nights, if I had a wedding, I'd play a wedding on Friday night. Then I'd play my show at 2 o'clock on Saturday. Then Saturday night, I'd play a wedding. And Sunday, I'd play my show at 2 or 3 o'clock. So I was pretty busy, and, you know, addition to working all day, and my ex-wife was at home taking care of our daughter. Cool. Until I realized that all she did was go out and play dates, which I can't stand that word to this day. But she'd go out and play dates, have a good time, and she was, you know, great at taking care of our daughter. She's a great mom when it comes to taking care of our daughter. She's great. And I say this after all that I went through, she is important to our children. So everything was cool, but I realized she wasn't necessarily the greatest wife. Maybe I wasn't the greatest husband, and I realize now, because being a nice guy like I was, I realized that I was doing everything for her, and I realize now that women can't stand nice guys. They don't like pushovers. A guy that says, yeah, what do you want to do, honey? Anything you want. Anything. What do you want to do? I'll do anything you want. It's like they don't find that desirable. It's funny to hear that. And, you know, you heard the saying, nice guys finish last. Well, they do.
Okay. All right.
So as I was going through all this, I realized our relationship was deteriorating. All she'd do was go out. You know, not that I expect anyone to cook and clean like they say a wife is supposed to do, but she didn't do either. And then we didn't have sex. You know, that's a big part of a marriage. And all that you want to do is play. I felt left out. I'm like, I'm doing all this work. And I didn't think that she wasn't doing anything, because taking care of a baby is extremely difficult, because I've done it. But, you know, I'm doing a lot of stuff. And it became very tense. Like most families start to get this thing going, this dynamic, where I'm doing all this work and you're not. well, we kind of felt that way, and it, our relationship deteriorated because we never communicated. And it's a longer story as far as our relationship, but we she just felt that things were getting too tense. We would argue all the time, and she felt that it wasn't good for our kids. It was extremely, extremely tense. So she said, you know what, I'm filing for divorce. So August 17th, 2007, she filed for divorce.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, that's cool, but what's the grounds that you're going to file for? Because I had done my research, because I knew things were coming to an end. I should go file for divorce first, but she did. I said, what are the grounds that you're going to file for? Back then, New York State, you had to have grounds for divorce. So she didn't know, because she didn't know the law, but I did. She used constructive abandonment, which meant that I refused to have sex with her, which was ridiculous, because what man's going to want to refuse to have sex with a pretty good-looking woman? She basically would have had to prove it in the court of law that this man refused to have sex with this woman. I said, you're going to have to take this all the way to trial. If you want what you say you want, which is me to see the kids every other weekend and me paying 25% of my gross income to you plus alimony and your attorney's fees, you're going to have to prove this. I was determined to make her tell the truth because I realized she has a propensity to not tell the truth. And on top of that, I felt betrayed because like so many cases when you go into court, you have to tell a lie to try to get out of your marriage. She said I was a horrible father, her first lawyer said I was a horrible father and all this stuff. I was like, I can't believe you're saying this about me. You know better. All she wanted was me to get kicked out. So that, on top of the fact that after she did that, we went to family court, and the family court magistrate knew that our case was going to go to Supreme Court where our divorce is going to be settled, but in the meantime, her lawyer said, you go to family court, you make up all this stuff, he's abusive, he's threatening you, he needs to leave. None of this was true. So the family court magistrate said, this is nonsense. You know you guys are going to settle on Supreme Court. What are you guys doing here? But since you're here, I have to do something. All right, since you're not working, ma'am. Basically, she quit her job during the time that I was working all this stuff. And we discussed it. It was cool. But since she wasn't working, the family court magistrate said, ma'am, you get $500 cash, he pays the mortgage, maintenance, utilities, and the groceries, and yes, ma'am, you get $500 cash. I was like, you got to be kidding me. I was like, what does she have to do other than go on play dates all day? I mean, I didn't say this, but this is what I was thinking. I was like, no, this is not going to last very long because I did nothing wrong except for be nice, do whatever I could to keep the family. I was trying to keep the family together. So what do you want to do? She didn't want me to. It gets even more complicated. But we don't have enough time for me to tell my whole story.
Okay.
But the bottom line is this. When that happened, and on top of the fact she made up all this stuff about me, I was like, there's no way I'm going to let my name be smeared all over these court documents for our kids to see 30 years from now. It's not going to happen. And I'm going to let them know that I was there for them then. I'll be there for them 3 or 4 years from now, which is today, and I'll be there 40 years from now when they turn 30 or whatever they're going to turn. So I knew then that I was not going to give her anything. I was not going to leave. I was not going to give her any more money, and I was not going to give her anything that was any more or less than I got. I wanted equal time with the kids, and we're going to share everything, and that's the way it was going to be. People are like, how are you going to get that? My parents are like, just give her money. Just get it over with. You know, we're dragged out for 11 months, and it cost tens of thousands of dollars. Still paying for it to this day. Hers must have cost at least twice as much as mine. But, yes, if you want an equal time with your kids, you're going to have to pay for it one way or another. So we went through court, and I was like, you're not getting a dime from me. We're going to share these kids equally. And there's nothing that you can do about it. No judge. I said this to everyone. No judge, no jury, no lawyer, no parent, no ex-wife is going to stop me from being a father to these kids. I'm going to be there during the day. You're going to have them at night. We're going to share the expenses. End of story. And that's how I wound up. That's right. I said, you're not getting a dime, but we're going to share these kids. I see no reason for anyone to pay child support when I have them from 7:15 until 6 p.m. during the day, Monday through Thursday, and 7:15 until 3:15 on Friday, and I get them one Sunday a month, and they stay overnight on Monday nights. Why should I pay her money? You know, if you look at it, she should be paying me money because I have them more of the waking hours than her. But I think the whole child support system is ridiculous. The whole idea of me or anyone having to pay a percentage of your gross income is punitive. It only punishes and doesn't help anyone. Yes, every case is different. Certain people need the financial support from mothers or fathers that choose not to support their children financially. Yes, there are cases that need it, and there's a lot of cases that need that. But just to expect child support just because you're no longer together is an outdated notion. And what I'm trying to do, and I'm going to do, is change the perception that child support is an automatic default position once the split of the parents begins.
Okay. All right. We're going to have to go to break, okay?
All right.
We're going to go to break, and I'm going to come back.
Sounds good.
The criminal justice system is where some men end up for failure to pay child support. What are your thoughts concerning this? Were you concerned about having a record if you couldn't pay the child support?
Nope, because I am not at all involved in the system of the state.
No, before, but were you concerned before about being involved in the criminal justice system?
No, I've never seen the inside of a jail. I don't know, you know, I know a lot more about it now, but jail and prison, that wasn't even on my radar. You know, the thing, other than the fact that my ex called the police on me 8 times to try to get me kicked out of the house, that's my only experience with police officers up that close is then. But no, I was never concerned about being sent to jail because I never had to pay child support because I've always been supportive of my children.
Okay. Some men do end up in the criminal justice system. Some men do, not you, but some men do. What are your thoughts concerning this for those who don't have the ability to pay you? To pay the child support. They once had a job, especially in this economy, and they end up with records. Do you feel, are women, for that matter, who pay child support, and they end up with criminal records for failure to pay? I feel like this. If somebody doesn't have the ability to pay, but they're trying, you should work with them.
That's correct. And that's how I feel, too. I'm going to say this till I'm blue in the face. Keep your family out of the claws of our state judicial system. Keep your family out of the anything to do with the state, the city, or the federal government. Keep your family out of it, because once they get in, they're not going to get out. I say this because, as someone who has studied taxes, because my friend, again, I studied a little bit of taxes too. I realized that being a musician, you know, if you're not getting money from a place where you get W-2 income, they request that you pay quarterly tax payments. If you start that, they're going to continue to ask you, where are your quarterly payments? If you don't pay, then you got to pay them a penalty. That is similar to someone being required to pay child support, like I was. Basically, like I was. I was required to pay for the 11 months that I was in our custody battle. I was required to pay. And if I didn't pay, I would be sent to jail. In fact, you know what? It's interesting you brought that up, because that almost happened. I'm glad you jogged my memory. There was a hearing that we had in family court, the follow-up on the original hearing that we had, and we both decided, against my better judgment, to go there without lawyers. Never, ever go to any court without a lawyer. Never do that, because you're just going to get beaten up and bruised and come out with your head between your legs, your tail between your legs, and your head down. I went in there because, you know, I was supposed to pay her $500 a month. I didn't have $500 cash, just give her like that. Plus, I didn't want to, and that's another reason why I think being forced to pay child support when you want to take care of your kids, you're only going to resent the mother, and that creates more problems that the state creates, because they're just looking out for their own best interests instead of the interests of the family unit. But I was forced to pay, and I could only pay her a certain amount per month. So during the date, it was March 17th, 2008. Again, I remember these dates like it was yesterday. We walked in there, and the magistrate was like, sir, have you been paying the mortgage maintenance utilities and paying her $500 a month? I shook my head yes. She shook her head no. Ma'am, is this true? She's like, no, he hasn't been. Sir, go outside right now. Get her this money from ATM. If you don't do that, I'm sending you to jail. I was like, I've been paying the mortgage. Sir, if you don't do that right now, I'm sending you to jail. She didn't want to hear anything from me, even though I was paying her. I hadn't paid her the whole thing, but I was paying her. And then, again, that's partly my fault, and I accept responsibility for when I don't do what I'm supposed to do. But I was working on it. Of course, I didn't have all the money at one time because I didn't have $500 cash. I didn't, you know, it's not easy to just come up with $500 cash every month. So I went outside, got to the ATM. I took out more money than I had in my bank, of course. It gave me the money, but it charged me a $39 overdraft fee. I had to come back, and I was furious. I got back in there, and she said, sir, hand her the money. Like I was some kind of whipping boy. Because, you know, they love that. They love messing with men, because there's so many men that just screw up everything for people like me. She saw me as just yet another one of those people, because, of course, I'm being a black man, and her having pale skin, because she's not black, put it like that. And she just was just joyful in seeing me hand her this money. Now, if I didn't do it, I'd be sent to jail for not, you know, for contempt of court, basically. And that's what happens when you don't pay child support. I just think it's ridiculous. If I was going to be put in jail, who would be paying the mortgage, maintenance, utilities, and getting her money? She would have to go on welfare because she was not working. Does it make any sense for someone to be put in jail if they can't pay, not because they don't want to pay, if they don't have the ability to pay?
Inability to pay, yes. I understand what you're saying.
If they don't have the ability to pay, they lose my job like, you know, most people have done over the past 4 years. What good is it? It may, you know, does it send a message to the other guys? Well, if you don't pay, you're going to go to jail. Some of the guys don't care. They'd rather be sent to jail because they felt kicked out by the family in the first place. They can't stand their ex-wife. They rarely see their kids. What good is it? What's, you know, I don't have a job. I need a place to stay. You know, I mean, that's the mentality of so many people, but they don't see, the family court system doesn't see the importance of fathers and why it's important to the kids. The kids are wondering, why is daddy in jail? The mother's like, you know, who cares about him? And there's just the cycle continues. I just don't see it as being a positive thing. What's the answer? The answer is not to not put people in jail. I think we need to reexamine that. But I think we need to dig deeper and a lot further into the cultural norms that we think are acceptable. I think we need to look at the value of the family a lot more than we do, instead of evaluating our jobs and our work. I think we also need to reexamine the role of the father in our society and his role in strengthening the family bond. I mean, there's all kind of things that can be addressed, but I think as a society we choose to deal with the symptoms and not the causes. And just like an old line of the Parliament Funkadelic song, if you don't like the effects, don't produce the cause.
Okay. We're going to talk about the Monahan Report, which is also known as the Negro Family, the case, the case for national action, written by Daniel Monahan.
Yes.
In 1965. I'm going to read a little bit of it, and I'll only read a few sentences. I'm not going to read a whole lot. It says that a community that allows large numbers of young men to grow up in broken families dominated by women, never acquiring any stable relationship to make authority, to male authority, never acquiring any set of rational expectations about the future, that community asks for and gets chaos, crime, violence, unrest, disorder, a knowledge expressed they are very near inevitable. I would like to say this was written really 48 years ago. What is your point of view about the Monahan Report?
I think it's a document that everyone that's concerned at all about the family should read. I think what's going on now in our communities has only gotten worse. I mean, you think about the high school dropout rate. You know, 71% of all high school dropouts come from fatherless homes. You know, 70% of juveniles are in state-operated institutions. They come from fatherless homes too. I mean, there's all kind of statistics out there that point to the breakdown of the family that started decades ago in the black community. And like I said earlier, if you want to look at what it's like having a community of single-parent homes, just look no further than your black community. And we haven't progressed any further than we have in 1965. Yeah, there has been Thurgood Marshall as Supreme Court Justice, and there's Clarence Thomas now, and there's Barack Obama, who's half Negro. There's all kinds of senators, but the vast majority of the black community, quote-unquote, is not in a good place. And I think if you look at the predictions that were talked about in the Moynihan Report, you'll see that a lot of the predictions came true. A lot of people don't want to see it. They think that it was racist because he was white. But when you hear it coming from somebody like myself, if people are more receptive to it when it comes from a woman, a black woman at that, and there's a black woman that I actually have a relationship with. She is working with addressing fatherless homes to, her name is Tori J. She's very, very...
Tori J. Evans, the Fatherless Generation. She has been on my show, and she is great.
Yes, she is. And if the things are coming from someone like her, people are like, oh, you know what, you're making a lot of sense. But if it comes from me, they're like, oh, man, you just hate women. If it comes from a white man, it's like, oh, you hate black people and you hate black women. It's like, no, they're saying the same thing that she's saying. But maybe it's just coming from a different source, but people are more willing to accept it. But I just think that people need to wake up to the reality of the broken home and how it impacts everyone around you. It's not just these ghetto people that, and let them, you know, have their single moms on welfare. Yeah, well, those kids grow up and they rob you, or they start costing the system a lot more than just welfare. They start costing, you know, they actually start costing more because there's no family, there's no father to take care of the women, so the women go on welfare, which is exactly what the Moynihan Report was talking about before, and the reason why welfare began in the first place is to address fatherless homes in the 1930s. So I just think it's interesting to view that particular report, which is available everywhere. Of course, it's available and a link to my blog, Syncopation. But it's something that I think we need to review and look at the causes of what's going on. And I think that there are people that are starting to address these things, and it's really interesting to watch what's going on in the greater community. There has been a series of articles and books and talks about single motherhood and how it's not necessarily what it's cracked up to be. Anyone who's raised a kid on their own would tell you this is not all fun and games. You know, you might want to have a baby, and you might want to think it's cool, yeah, I need a baby, and but when that baby comes and you got to go to work, you got to feed the baby, and baby grows up to be a toddler and has all kind of issues, and you're the only person there, it's not as easy as you think it is. But there's articles, and there's a book called The End of Men by an author named Hannah Rosen, which is talking about the decline, really, of white men and their influence in the family and how they're, the lack of, I guess, available men to marry and to be there for the family has now affected the greater community. And it's just really interesting to see that the parallels between what happened in the Moynihan Report in 1965 and what's going on in 2012 with the End of Men. A lot of similarities. I just don't think people are just choosing to ignore it for as long as they possibly can because they want to have this fantasy of, you know, being the Destiny's Child independent woman. Go ahead and be independent, but realize there are consequences to that.
Okay, so what you're saying is children need both parents, and also children need both parents, and I agree with that. I like to say there are 24 million, according to the census, there are 24 million children in America. Almost one out of three live in homes where the biological parent is absent, according to the United States Census. You wrote that far too many single mothers that do not receive anything from the non-custodial parent, and I agree with you. I just have to wonder, do you feel that there's an attack or there's a war against the black family or families in general?
Great question. I don't like to use that term war on this, war on that. I know that we tend to value certain things more than others. We value our occupation rather than our social standing in society as far as, you know, our role that we play. Now, it's interesting. The very beginning of the show, you asked me what my occupation was.
Mm-hmm.
And people ask me that all the time. Like, what do you do? And, you know, that's one of the questions that you hear at a party. Like, what do you do? I usually make up something to throw them off. Because I don't want to, it doesn't mean nearly as much what I do as far as, my role as a father is the most important thing that I do. I should have said, my occupation, I don't really have an occupation. I do, but one of my main focuses is being a father to my children. And I'd love to be a husband to a woman, but I think that getting back to your question, I think that our society values what we do as opposed to, you know, what we do for a living as opposed to what we do in our community. We tend to go to work and work so hard to be CEO or the partner or, you know, the director or the the lieutenant, whatever you, you know, whatever your chosen occupation is, you work so hard, but you neglect the thing that I feel is the most important, which is family. We just have a culture that values things that are really meaningless in the long run, because at any point in time, you can get fired, and they can care less about you. They don't care about you. What do you do for them? Well, I don't have a job anymore because I just got fired yesterday. So does that mean that you're any less of a person? No. You're still a loving parent. You're still a loving brother. You're still a member of the community board. You're still a deacon. You're still a pastor. You're still a researcher, a blogger, whatever you want to do. You're still making a difference in our world instead of just going to work. A lot of people's work is meaningless, and I got to say, my work, I have the greatest job on the planet. Luckily, I do what I love to do for a living, and I make people happy when I do it. So I'm more than happy to say I'm a musician, but I'm happier to say that I'm a father to my two beautiful children, which I'm looking at as we speak. But I think there's not necessarily a war on families. I mean, there's definite forces out there that are not in favor of supporting the family union. People want to say, mothers, the people look down on mothers that stay home from work. I say, man, if you want to stay home from work, whether it be their father or their mother, I think it's more important for the parent to stay home than a nanny, which I've seen over the past 9 years when I take my kids to playgrounds. I see nothing but nannies taking care of kids. I'm like, why have kids if you're not going to take care of them? But I know people have to work. I understand that. And, I can't stop people from, trying to make a good living and living a certain lifestyle. But people just have these babies and say, oh, you take care of them. And that kind of leads into another thing. When people have kids, they expect our school systems to take care of and feed and teach, when that is your job. You are the first teacher of these children. If you expect our school systems to do the job that you're supposed to do, you're going to be severely disappointed. So I think a lot of the times our society doesn't have the support systems necessary to support healthy child rearing, and doesn't support the ideals that I think are important, which, again, having mothers and fathers in the home. I mean, there's a reason why as men and women we complement one another. We have different parts for different reasons. We have different ways that we handle things for a different reason. Women are emotional, men are physical. Women, regardless if you believe it or not, they are very nurturing. And we can be nurturing too, but we just have different ways of handling things that help with the rearing of a child. And there's a reason why we exist. To think that fathers are not important is ridiculous.
Okay. All right. We're going to go to break, and we're going to come back and talk to you some more.
All right.
A special event can be very challenging and stressful at times. Our staff of professionals organizes your event down to every last detail, no matter what size. Our creativity and attention to detail turns your ordinary party into an extraordinary event. And Decline provides world-class service. We coordinate quality events. We can provide travel arrangements, accommodations, event sites, caterers, florists, photographers, transportation, hairstylists, and makeup artists, daily itineraries, and pre-event information such as detailed maps, save-the-date cards, and invitations. Being a custom event planner means that we cater to you. It is our job to find the best possible way to present your event. We have been referred to as Dreamweaver.
Listener, let's not forget, go buy an Encounters mortgage investments. If you're interested in getting financing for your commercial financing, contact Go Buy an Encounters at 678-607-5092. Don't forget Go Buy an Encounters, and that was Andy Clyde, the commercial that was playing. Mr. Craddock.
Yes.
As a female, believe it or not, even though I'm a female and you're a male, I understand where you're coming from. And believe it or not, I understand where you're coming from.
Good.
I'm not against everything you said at all. There are people that I know personally, women who have had to pay child support and got very little visitation with their children.
And how does how does that make them feel?
Awful.
Now, do they think that, you know, we should continue?
It's unfair. I also want to talk about something. I don't know if you feel qualified to talk about it or not, but we're going to talk about it anyway. The welfare system.
Yes.
Now, the welfare system has all types of people in it, and I'm not putting people down or anything like that. I really am not. But the welfare system, when people are on Section 8 housing, HUD, they kind of like the rent goes up if you make so much money, and they kind of penalize the family for having a man in the household. And that, I feel, is unfair.
Unfair.
To the children. What I'm saying by the welfare system, they penalize. If you have a man in the household and he's making income, normally you can, you do better with the system if you don't have anybody living with you. Just your children and you. So I'm saying the Section 8 housing somewhat penalizes people. Do you agree?
Yeah. I mean, I can understand that. I've heard of situations where certain people
get... It's widespread.
Yeah, and people don't want to admit that or say it, but yes, it's true. And, you know, again, that's just... Regardless of what somebody might say, you hear it did start out as a tender years doctrine where judges would give custody to women because, you know, they needed the mother in their tender years. They took that, they did through a lot of legislation and wrangling, they took that away, and now it's in the best interest of the children. But let me tell you, it's nothing the government does, state government or the federal government, is in the best interest of children. You know, welfare is a safety net, and, you know, I think it's important to have that. But yes, people do use the system to get whatever benefits they can get. If it means that, man, you got to go, they're going to do that, but not understanding the long-term ramifications.
Is the rent goes up. If you got a $150 rent payment or $200 rent payment, that's just an example, it goes up to $400 and $500. if there's another income in there, a $500 or $600. You get what I'm saying?
In other words, if you have somebody contributing, then they're going
to
raise the
in
rent.
In the household, and they are known to be in the house, and if you don't report the income, it's considered fraud. So that's why I'm saying it penalizes people.
Well, it kind of leads down the path of what you were talking about as far as is there a war on a family. It's basically things are set into place to not support the family unit, which comes back to what I was talking about. If situations like that, if you don't have a man in the house, then you get these benefits like child support or, you know, alimony or Section 8 housing, which is cheaper than having a man there. Why have a father in the house?
Right.
And the problem is children need the mother and the father, but due to the way our system has been set up, it discourages behavior that is that has long-term positive benefits to not only the children but to our society as a whole. If you look at everything that's going on, like I said before, as far as dropout, as far as the teenage pregnancy, as far as crime, as far as behavioral problems, and of course when you start having behavioral problems, then they start labeling your children as having attention deficit disorder, then they give you Adderall and Ritalin and all these things to young children, and mothers are like, hey, do whatever you got to do to straighten out this kid because there's no father there to provide guidance. So these kids are acting all wild. Sedate them with a drug, and they'll be fine, and then they'll wind up being on drugs and they have more problems later on because of these drugs that were prescribed. And, again, it's not in the best interest of the child. It's in the best interest of the drug manufacturer. It's in the best interest of the court system to keep you on hamster wheel. It's in the best interest of the state to keep people employed in the welfare. They're not trying to cut welfare because there's too many employees that are getting paid. And, again, it comes back to what you're saying. Everything is we're all connected, and there's all kind of ways that people don't see the connection. But if you break down the family, not only do you have a black family, black and Hispanic family unit that is weak, they are more controlled because they don't have anybody standing up for their own interests. They don't have any political power. They don't have any financial means because they're on Section 8 housing. How are they going to transfer wealth down to their next generation if they can't buy houses? If they don't have any investments. They're not going to be able to participate in the quote-unquote American dream because they don't have the systems and the means in place to help perpetuate a legacy. All they're doing is surviving.
Sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes young people end up in the criminal justice system. And this is a tragedy. This is a tragedy. They end up in the criminal justice system, and a lot of times they are without fathers and mothers being in the same home. So I think that's a tragedy.
Yep, and that comes from not having the proper guidance. I mean, what most of these kids that grow up in gangs are looking for some kind of male validation to like get involved in a gang, which is not there to do anything like a father would do as far as taking them to any kind of sporting event so they can be part of an organized system where they can get out their aggression in a way that sports does. I mean, football, baseball, basketball, whatever. And even if you're involved in doing a musical thing like I am, you know, playing rock music is a way of getting out that male energy in a way that's productive instead of doing it in a non-productive, antisocial way that gangs do it. People look at gangs and hanging out in the corners as, you know, a way to be a man, but being a man means being responsible. Being responsible, being a provider, being protector, and being there for your spouse, being there for your children. It's not about being out in the corner and showing your quote-unquote masculinity by beating someone or shooting someone. That's a warped sense of masculinity. That's what also needs to be changed. But, you know, and that leads people into the prison industrial complex, which, again, is not in your best interest. They're not there to rehabilitate. They're there to supposedly punish, but they're there to get more bodies in their beds because a lot of these prisons are now
corporations, and the more people that are in their system, the more money they
make. Privately owned. They're privately owned now.
And then once
it's
a person gets
the stock market.
Once a person gets into the prison system, they're not getting out. Like I said before, once the state has you in their claws, they're not letting go. Stay out of anything that has to do with the state. Stay out. That is my number one advice to any man, woman, or child, and I say this to my kids. I mean, they're too young to totally understand, but you do not want to get involved with the state at all. Other than paying state taxes and federal taxes, keep them out of your business because they're not going to get out. They're just there to perpetuate their own existence. So when you talk about the prison system, yes, once you get a record, then you become a felon. If you become a felon,
you can't pay child support because nobody's going to hire you if you are a man or a woman.
Exactly. Then you can't vote.
And you cannot vote.
You have no say, which doesn't make any sense to me. But that's a whole other discussion, which I highly suggest everyone check out a book called The New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander. Amazing book that I think everyone should read. And it talks about the prison industrial complex. Totally changed my whole viewpoint of what's going on. I realize it is the new Jim Crow. It's a way of keeping people on the margins of our society.
Yes. Yes, keeping people on the margins of society. You are correct. You're more than correct. Is there anything you'd like to add that hasn't been covered?
I just would like to let people know that the perceptions that people have of men are generally skewed. You know, I was working out yesterday, and there's like ten TV screens in front of the treadmill, so there's all kind of images going. You know, it was during the day, and there was the Maury Povich show, I think is his name. You know, You Are Not the Father. It's always on TV. It's like, you know, people think it's great entertainment, but it perpetuates this this view of men that, you know, fatherhood is just, you know, a paternity test. And it's like, you're the father. I'm not really happy because I am the father. But if I'm not the father, I'm happy. It's totally backwards. And on top of that, you got a lot, it's nothing but women in the audience looking to denigrate these men. Yeah, there are some men that just don't have it together, but that's because they probably didn't grow up with a father. And they didn't grow up with a father, and their father's father wasn't around starting back in the 1940s going into the 60s, which, getting back to the original question, was about the Moynihan Report. It's been going on for decades, and what you're seeing now is the effects. You have to look at the cause and what's going on. I think the Maury Povich show only perpetuates the all these women yelling at the man, and the man has his head down, and you ain't nothing, and, you know, get out of here. And then they start fighting. The men fight with each other. And look at these bum men. But let me tell you, there's a lot of black men just like me who have great jobs, make a lot of money, who love our kids, and who want to be married, believe it or not. Yes, we do. And a lot of women don't know how to be married. I mean, they have this idea of being married. And a lot of men don't know how to be married either. I think it's important for children to grow up in a household with a mother and a father. I think it's important to value the institution of marriage, even though it's slowly being dismantled. And I think that we need to view men in a different light because there are plenty of us out here. I don't know any man in my circles that just leave their kids and say, oh, man, you know, after this, I'm out of here. You know, I'll just pay child support. I don't know any of them because I grew up around people that actually have some kind of sense of morality and know the value of what men bring to the table. It's just natural. So I think we need to just rethink what's going on out there and take a deeper look. Next time, you know, I don't know if everyone here goes out, but trust me, we're out here. We're not necessarily at the club. We're at the grocery store. We're at the post office. We're walking down the street. We're at the bookstore. We're at the library.
We have
wherever you look.
I'm sorry.
But we're everywhere. So just understand there are lots of us out here. And If you want any more information about what I'm doing, of course, my website, ClaytonCraddock.com. And thank you for having me on the show.
Your real estate is Clayton Craddock. All right, thank you for coming on Show Talk with Angela Butler.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right.